Welcome to the Hearts Entwined podcast. In this podcast, we'll be having discussions around the secrets which attract lasting, healthy, fulfilling relationships, creating a healthy mindset, and what women should know and understand about men. Introducing your host, Lynn Smith, the Queen of Hearts, relationship expert, trainer, speaker, and best-selling author of The Cupid's Bow Technique. Lynn's mission is to have a positive impact in reducing divorce, domestic violence, and suicide.
Welcome to the Hearts Entwined podcast. This is your host, Lynn Smith, the Queen of Hearts. And today, listeners, we're going to be talking about marriage and how you can elevate your marriage. So if you know that your marriage is going through a bit of a phase, want of a better expression, then I've got a great guest on today that's going to help you to elevate that. So welcome, Shiloh Minor.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
So Shiloh, you specifically have this as your particular niche in terms of relationships. So firstly, just tell the audience a little bit about yourself and how you sort of got started around this.
Thank you. So my name is Shiloh Minor, and I'm a love coach for married women. And I got started in this because I got married, you know, when I was almost 30 to a really great guy. And then I had two kids, and then things got really hard. And I didn't know why, because I had done therapy. I had read a lot of relationship books in my life. I considered myself, you know, a with it intelligent person, as well as my husband. But the emotional connection was really struggling, and I did not know how to make it right. And people say, well, did you tell him? Well, yeah, of course I told him. I hate it when people say that. It's like, yes, most all of the women I work with have tried to tell their husbands multiple times what they're dealing with, what they're struggling with. And it just never seems to land right. And it can cause a fight. And, you know, you ask for therapy. And my husband is not interested in therapy. And most men are actually not interested in therapy. There are some who are, but a lot are not. So I hit this wall. And I woke up one day and went, this is everything I've wanted in life, and I'm not happy. So maybe I need some help. Someone to help me with this. Yeah. And so I went out and got some help. And at the time it was a parent coach, because the kid thing was driving me up the wall. And it invited me into this world of conscious living, self-responsibility, emotional regulation, and all the light bulbs went on. And I went, oh my goodness, the way I've been responding to my husband has been making things worse instead of better. I've been reactive, I've been blaming, I've been critical, I've been grumpy all the time. Like, I was pretty much doing everything backwards to what I wanted to happen. And so I took that insight and I started improving my marriage, and I started bringing back the emotional safety and connection. And after I had, you know, turned it completely around, a 180 from when I was just like really sad and lonely all the time to like, oh wow, like we talk a lot and things are good and there's chemistry, I thought, I have to share this with other women. There's so many women who must be exactly like me. I'm like a normal person. We don't have any addiction or infidelity or anything crazy wrong with our marriage. And yet, you know, I didn't have the tools. He didn't have the tools or insight to know how to have a fulfilling, long-term, passionate relationship. And so that's when I started coaching. I went, I'm going to take all these books and all these things I've been reading my whole life, and then my personal transformation, and I'm going to systematize that. I created the Real Love Method. And that's what I teach to my clients now.
Excellent. I think you hit on a point really there. And I think I just want to share, because mostly my audience is women, that, you know, and quite often they say, well, why do we have to do the work? Well, it isn't about, you know, why do we have to do the work as women? It's more about, like you said, you know, that's one of the differences between the sexes. Men are less likely to reach out for any self-help in terms of counseling, coaching, therapy, because, you know, they want to be able to solve problems more for themselves. And it's the women that are more likely to, you know, 80-90% of us are more likely to reach out for help, because we're the collaborative energy in the relationship, aren't we?
Yes, I love that you shared that. And of course, that's the question always, why do I have to do it? Why do I have to do it? And I went through that too, especially because when I was transforming in my marriage, I didn't have a marriage coach. And so I was dealing with all the old resentments and the ego and the conditioning that says, oh, it's not fair for women. It's not fair for women. And what I always share with my clients is, you don't have to do anything you don't want to do.
No. And
you don't have to do anything.
And it
Sorry.
is about, you know, by you working on yourself, then it inspires them to respond to that, doesn't it? So you do get what you want out of it, even if they're not actively involved in the self-help bit of it.
That's right. And so I say, you don't have to do anything you don't want to do, but what do you want to achieve? And you have the opportunity to take on this internal work and to take on, you know, investing in yourself or learning from podcasts and books. And that means you're going to become a woman who gets what she wants in life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's about, you know, women understanding that they have the power, you know, in that dynamic to be able to transform things in their relationship. And their husband doesn't necessarily need to know what they know, so long as they know what they know and are able to implement it, he'll be able to respond to that in a positive way. And then you'll get what you want out of the relationship.
Exactly.
And, you know, it isn't about also, you know, beating yourself up if you've not been aware of this stuff previously, because we don't get taught this, do we, or educated about this.
Absolutely. There's no shame or blame for you or for your husband. We're innocent here. You know, you got married to someone because you love them and you wanted to, you know, see the best in them and give them grace and have patience. And that all should be extended to you too. We just don't know better. We have no idea what we're doing when it comes to marriage nowadays.
No, and usually our parents aren't great role models, and certainly not, you know, something that's on the curriculum in schools, is it?
No, absolutely not. And you know, I always tell people 50% of marriages end in divorce, but that doesn't mean the other 50% are happy. We know very well that most people are not really fulfilled and happy in their marriages. So if you want to have what I call a real life love story, you know, that's been through the ups and downs, that's had all the stresses, but comes out on top, comes out like, wow, this is someone I'm so lucky to spend my whole life with. If you want to be that person, that's an extraordinary experience. You need to take extraordinary steps to achieve it, because most people will not have that.
That's very true. So, you know, if somebody's coming to you, Shiloh, and they're in that situation that you were in, what's the starting point that you, you know, can share with us around what to do?
Mm-hmm. So the first step when you decide that you're going to be taking action in your marriage is you take responsibility for your own emotions. And this is something that can feel really triggering when you're really sad and upset and you feel wronged in your marriage. Like, well, why doesn't he help me? And shouldn't he say sorry? And it's like, no, we put all that on the shelf, all the blame, all the you have to do this. And we say, I want to feel better. I don't feel good and I want to feel better. And then we learn ways. And in my practice, I teach a lot of inner child work to connect with our own selves, to soothe our own feelings, to help ourselves navigate the emotional landscape inside us. When you do that, you feel less desperate for your husband to get it today, which is what happens when you don't know how to manage your own emotions.
And what would be sort of like an easy exercise you'd be prepared to share around managing your emotions?
Thank you. So what you can do is go, I do this at night, when you have no kids and no distractions and you just have a little time to yourself, maybe before you go to sleep even, put one hand on your chest, one hand on your belly, take 3 or 4 deep, long breaths, and just ask yourself, what do you have to share with me? It's like, what are you feeling? Those questions you long for your husband to ask yourself that question, what's going on with you? And you'll start to hear bubble up, if you do this regularly, all these emotions and all this chatter, which is often your inner child saying, it's not fair. Why do I have to do this? This is so hard. I'm so angry. I'm so sad. Let all of that bubble up and just hold it as if it were a baby. And you know, you soothe the baby and you hold it and you say, oh, I know that's hard. And you pat it. Oh, and you don't rush it and you don't panic. You just rock yourself and hold yourself. And really, this is a practice you can do every night of your life for the rest of your life. And you will grow up and be more confident and be more happy and be more whole for doing it.
Excellent. I love that exercise. And I'm assuming that quite strong emotions can raise the head and you might end up in floods of tears around doing an exercise like that. And that's okay.
Oh, completely. Completely. I'm still like that. Because what I've learned is that now that my marriage is stable and secure and there's no chaos in it, I'm going down into deeper levels of my own healing. So when I do this, I bawl my eyes out. I don't know why half the time, but it's because, we didn't come here by accident. If you're on a healing journey and you're doing this work, I think all of us know we had a lot of difficult experiences in our childhoods and afterwards that left us with a backlog of pain and sadness.
Absolutely. And I always think tears are healing tears. I think it's a form of releasing and purging in some senses.
Completely. I welcome them and I feel, it's that's to sound funny, I feel proud of myself when I cry. I'm like, I'm doing the work. Here I am being with difficult emotions, not running from them. I'm not going eating. I'm not scrolling Netflix. There's so many other ways we can numb and avoid that pain that when you do let the tears flow, give yourself a pat on the back. That's the real work. It's good.
Absolutely, because the alternative is, either we suppress it and that can cause ill health issues, can't it? Or we can, like you say, even lash out at others, not necessarily our partner, but maybe our children or maybe other people that are around us, if we don't purge these things in a healthy way.
Yes, that's absolutely right. We need to get it out. We need to get it out. And when I start working with clients, I always tell them, you can vent everything to me. Don't feel shy. Don't feel bad. Even all the angry, judgmental, negative thoughts you're having, let them out to me because you cannot stuff those down and have a happy relationship. It's impossible.
Yeah, it just builds resentment. And then, on the back of that, as I say, it can affect your health, from the stress.
Completely. So many women have these chronic health syndromes, and I believe a lot of it is this emotional suppression.
Yeah, I agree 100%. So what is the most common story you hear, from clients in terms of, can you give us some examples that the audience might be able to relate to that's happening currently in their relationships? That they might be able to resonate with.
Thank you for that question. So the most typical thing I get is women saying, I feel kind of bad even talking about him because he's such a good guy. He works hard. He's never lies to me. He's never like I never have any worry that he's running off with people. He is a really good dad. He's just really consistent and loyal and does all the traditional man things really well, right? So they know that other women don't have that. So like really grateful, like this is good. And I have this pervasive sadness and loneliness because he doesn't really give me any non-sexual affection at all. Sometimes even the sexual attention is limited or just barely enough. Doesn't take me on dates, doesn't give me compliments. It's like the only love language, if you want to go to that paradigm, they're getting is acts of service. It's lots of great acts of service, but none of the other ones. And also sometimes in the acts of service, they're not getting the domestic help they want. So they might, the yard's done and all that stuff, but they want some more help around the home and they can't get them to help with that. So they're just feeling isolated in this situation that looks really, really good on paper. So there's almost like this self-judgment and shame for even having a problem. Like, shouldn't I just focus on being grateful and like let it go because I don't want to get a divorce? Like, no way. He's still a good guy. I would never do that to my kids in this situation. But what about me, right? So these women come to me with, am I even allowed to want what I want? Is it okay? Is it normal? Can I feel these things? And what I always say to them is, your feelings are never wrong. Absolutely, you can have your feelings. Normal is not what you want anyways, because average is divorced and unhappy. So doesn't matter if it's normal. Yes, it may be very common what you're experiencing, but you can still have an extraordinary relationship. And that this is a mixture of what you need from your husband and what you need from yourself. So we start with, let's put him to the side. And are you meeting your own needs for time, attention, affection, passion, pleasure, adventure? Like all these things that are genuine needs, we genuinely put them at the feet of men and say, I want to feel good. I have this plethora of real valid needs. Please do these things. Right. And first of all, he has no idea at all that this is happening, but we are betraying that we don't believe we're worthy of those things by not doing any of them for ourselves. Generally, not one of them.
And also expecting probably your partner to be the answer to everything, whereas, there are friends, family members, and people outside of your relationship with your husband that might be able to fulfill those needs.
Yes, completely. And so even as we move forward and as they heal their marriage and get some sort of more of those needs met in their marriage, there's this pillar of make sure you're exercising, make sure you're visiting your friends, make sure you call your sister, make sure you're, taking yourself on dates and continuing to not expect him to do all the things for you. Because yeah, we feel we have not been modeled, like you said. We have not been modeled a woman who loves herself and who prioritizes herself and who unapologetically does the things she needs for herself. So then for us to do that feels very strange. It can feel wrong. We can feel a lot of guilt. And so I hold my client's hand in stepping into that worthiness of like, it's okay for me to take care of myself. This is actually wonderful for me to take care of myself. And what's so cool about that is two things happen. When you do like high quality self-care, which means not just bubble baths, but like setting up a life in which you thrive. I always use the example of children. When we have kids, we make sure their physical, emotional, social, nutrition, intellectual needs are met. We work very hard to orchestrate their lives so that everything works in their favor. That's what we need to put that same intellect and energy and wisdom onto ourselves. How would I organize my life so that I thrive? So when you do that, two things happen. One, you just feel a lot better, which is wonderful for you. Two, you get really attractive to your husband and to everyone because you're just thriving and having a wonderful life. But the other thing that happens is you create receptors for those things. Like if you've never had your needs met and your husband tries to meet your needs, you'll probably block it. You probably won't even notice it happened. You'll probably resist that and not be able to receive it subconsciously. But when you become someone who's constantly receiving pleasure and happiness and attention and joy from yourself, it's almost like you have a receptor for that. There's a place for him to plug that into you. So you'll start noticing when he's doing it more, and he'll start doing it more because you are so receptive and so lit up when your needs are met.
Absolutely. And I think, a lot of us are not aware that we're quite sometimes resistant to receiving, whatever that might be, whether that's from our partner or anybody in our lives, aren't we? We're quite sort of willing quite often not even to receive compliments without batting it away or brushing it off.
Precisely. It's such a good example. And I work with a lot of twos on the Enneagram. I don't know if you're into that, but twos out there, I see you. I love you. You're my favorite people in the world. And twos show so much love by giving and providing and being there and holding space for people that they're very comfortable in that mode, and many of my clients in general. But then when somebody does something for them, they're like, oh, that's too much. That compliment is over the top. That way you put yourself out for me makes me really nervous. And what I always say to them is that they're not like you, where they're going to get resentful. Like women, we overgive and then we get resentful, right? We do. It doesn't come back and we hold a lot of resentment about that. Whereas men generally are not going to give to you unless they want to. And when they want to give it to you, they don't expect tit for tat. They don't want tit for tat. They're not going to hold it over your head that now they drove to get you or, spent money on you or did something for you. And so recognizing that the gift to the masculine is receiving, and that when you do tit for tat, you've actually blocked the whole thing. You've like ruined it for him.
Absolutely. And I think it's, absolutely okay, like you said, to give to yourself. And I think for me, I can remember as a child have the words I want literally trained out of me, because my mum's response to I want was I want, don't get. So, I had to grow up, changing that because your needs are important, and now I do care about what I want, and I'm able to say what I want.
Yes, so many of us had that experience where our parents or our siblings had more demanding needs, had more volatile emotions. I was the same. I was the more even-keeled child. I didn't rock the boat too much, which taught me not to rock the boat is how you get love. And I will say that in my own marriage, which is great, there's still always more you can receive. There's always more elevation, no matter what stage you're at. And every time I have a new desire or I have a desire to elevate, I have to rock the boat. And it's scary. You have to ask for things you haven't asked for before. You have to admit that you want to change the contract and the rules and the dynamics. You have to be willing to upset someone sometimes, even if it's a little bit, even if it's just their discomfort. And so I just want to say to all the women out there in marriages who are getting this cringe feeling as they hear all of this, he's not going to like that. He's going to react like this. What's he going to do? That's normal. It always feels scary at the beginning. But that's the fear that keeps you stuck in the same pattern forever. So when you hire a coach and you work with someone, there's that emotional support and guidance of this is worth it. You're not rocking the boat for no reason. Just keep taking those baby steps forward.
And also what I found, you know, from talking to my partners previously is that it may rock the boat initially, but when we've had conversations after that, you know, they might not particularly like it initially. Their reaction might not be a positive one. But, you know, subsequent to that, I've had the conversation where, you know, he's actually said, I really respected you for that. He says, I didn't respond well to it at the time. He says, but actually, I thought, good on you, woman.
I love that. That's such a good point. And that's the part where we often make the mistake of thinking that a man will love us more if we placate his needs and if we're always sweet and we never contradict. We shouldn't argue. But if we always just fit into his frame effortlessly, we think he'll adore us the most. But that's not the case. He will take us for granted the most if we're like that. And so many martyr moms who have done all the things for everyone else get so taken for granted. I find it absolutely heartbreaking. And the reality is, like you shared, is that when you own your worth, speak up when it's scary, men are tremendously admiring of that because they know it's not easy. You know, they know they can be grumpy and difficult and a little bit resistant. And they go, ah, this woman's got some chops. She, you know, she respects herself. And that elevates their respect of us at the same time, right? They see that worthiness and it inspires them.
Yeah. And it's important to have those healthy boundaries in place, you know, about what you're willing to accept or not accept.
Completely.
And I found if you're, you know, more of a people pleaser or a partner pleaser, you actually have probably less respect from him than if you're prepared to, you know, show up for your standard and be prepared to rock the boat. And as I say, it might not be initially received well, but, you know, later on, they have enormous respect for you actually standing up for yourself and showing yourself to be a high value woman.
Yes, that's right. And what I always say is it just takes patience. You don't want to look for the result you want in each individual interaction. You want to just trust this process. And in the big picture, he will come around most often. And that's because men are not going to jump to placate you. You know, men who are very masculine and strong, they're going to have to process what you said, think about it, internalize it, decide it's a good idea for them and for you, and then do it of their own free will. And so when we push a man like, hey, tell me what and what's going to happen and why haven't you yet? He won't do it because now it's about you. So just give him the time. I call it planting seeds. You just drop the seeds. You just drop them and you don't force them to germinate and grow. You know, they will. You just trust it. And trusting him and that he does care about what you have to say, even if he doesn't show it perfectly every time, is so vital.
Yeah. And I had a prime example of this in my last relationship. And I was with this relationship for 10 years. And when I first met him, I didn't know this at the time when I first met him, but he was a binge drinking alcoholic. And it obviously became evident to me in the first few weeks that this guy's got a problem. And I actually said to him, you know, I want to live a long, healthy life and I don't drink. I didn't make it about him. I didn't say he had to stop drinking, but literally, within the next 2 weeks, he come and told me that he'd quit and he was sober for the whole 10 years and still is today, 3 years later, because we're still amicably friends. And, you know, did it of his own volition, but without me pointing the finger and saying, you know, I don't want you to drink, because that he would have been obviously resistant to that. Definitely.
Wow, that's amazing. Like the power of addiction is so big, and just you with your self-worth, when you said you wanted to live that way, he got the message that you're not sticking around for a binge drinking lifestyle, that wasn't what you had in mind. And so you didn't even have to say all that. You just knew, I'm going to lose this woman if I don't get my act together.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And we literally was only together 6 or 7 weeks before we had that conversation where he said that, he'd stopped, and he literally did, what he said he was going to do, and never fell off that wagon.
That's beautiful. I love that story.
So just goes to show that sometimes if you meet somebody as well and they don't tick all the boxes, that so long as you communicate well and make it about your needs and wants, that they will be prepared to, if they want to win your heart and your love, and step up to the plate and be the high value man back in your, to match your high value woman vibe, then they will take that action, regardless of how hard it was. Because
I
I
have a
mean,
good
he,
example of that too. Oh, sorry.
yeah.
So same with me. When I met my husband, he had never wanted to get married. He was the whole, it's just a piece of paper, blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't know why, et cetera. And I just said, well, I believe in marriage. I will never have children, or I will never live with someone unless I'm married. And we got married. And I love it when my sister-in-law says, what did you do to him? He didn't want a home. He didn't want land. He didn't want to get married. And now you've got this big piece of land. We built a house together. We've got 2 kids. And I didn't know that. I didn't know how his whole story before me was about independence and, being not having anything holding you down and et cetera. I mean, partly I can't take all the credit. It was timing. He was on that page. But he would not have had a wedding or had a ceremony or any of that stuff if I hadn't just said, well, that's what I do. And what was so cool is I noticed a change in him after we did get married. Because even though he wasn't aware of his need for that strong container and security of it being like, this is a legal thing and we've said it in front of everybody, he soothed. He kind of came down a notch and he settled into the relationship more powerfully after we got married. And he told me how much he appreciated the wedding, something he had raved on about being a giant waste of money. But when he saw all our friends there, and we had a modest wedding, but it still cost something, he was really moved by it. And so that was also, an experience of when I was really just true to what was important to me, he got to benefit from my contribution to the relationship too.
Excellent. I love that story. Thank you so much for sharing that. So, for those listeners that are interested in connecting with you, Shiloh, that might be in this situation and might need some guidance and help, what's your best contact information?
So check out my website, www.shilohminor.com. That's the place if you want to take a deep dive, you can read my whole story and find out more about me and what I offer.
Thank you so much. And any final words of wisdom that you'd like to share for any listeners that might be, as I say, thinking that they can resonate with this situation?
So my main piece of advice is don't give up. Don't give up on him and your faith in him, but also don't give up on yourself and your needs. Because when you hold those two things together, it's amazing what you can create.
Thank you. It's been a very insightful and very interesting conversation, Charlie. Thank you very much.
I've enjoyed it very much. Thank you for having me on.
So it just leaves me to say that true love starts with opening our hearts. And until next time, goodbye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Hearts Entwined podcast. You can follow Lynn via the Facebook group Two Hearts Entwined, or search Lynn Smith, inspirational speaker at LinkedIn, or email lynn@hearts-entwined.com. That's lyn@hearts-entwined.com. Remember, true love starts with opening our hearts.